Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Eli, hour two, let's ride. Hour two of four, we are going until 10 o'clock tonight, talking about all sorts of stuff. In hour one, we discussed Javier Baez, we talked about the Bulls. In hour two, we're going to continue to talk about the Bulls and then go back to discussing Javier Baez when Jim Deshays joins me at 7:30. 8 o'clock, we will talk football. We're going to get, have like some sexy football talk. Like last night with the Anthony Herron stuff, a sexy football. We'll do some more sexy football with Dan Durkin. At 8, you'll want to stick around for that. If you are dying to get into some draft conversation, we got you. We just have the show in a couple different directions today, talking Bears and Bulls and Cubs. But we got you covered between now and 10 o'clock. And then when I'm done, it's Nick Szczepkowski on until midnight. Before we went to break, we were talking about the press conference that the Bulls held today into the season. John Paxson sits there in front of the beat reporters and talks about the season. I don't want to, this is me playing gatekeeper, but what we did with the press conference is that we broke it up. Instead of running the press conference, I wanted to put it in pieces. Like I wanted you to hear John Paxson's opening statement and then react to that and us talk about what we heard and then select some of the questions and his full answers. We did do that. That was one thing I told Herbie I wanted to do today. That I wanted to take full answers and let you hear that and then have you react to that. If you want to text the show, you can do so 670-11. If you want to call in, the phone number is 312-644-6767. This was John Paxson, his opening statement. This is him without being questioned how he felt about the 2017-2018 Chicago Bulls season.
10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. And we knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult. And we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today and starting this summer to become the type of basketball team that we want to become. We dealt with a lot of things this year. I think last year Fred and his staff set the culture correctly in the summertime with the work that they put in with our players. That got sideways a little bit when we had the incident early before the season even opened with Bobby and Nico. But even that had a silver lining in it that allowed us to get Lowry minutes that he may not have gotten early in the season. But our staff dealt with some real hurdles. We had some injuries this year that were uncommon to some key players, especially Chris Dunn. Chris, he had the finger that he broke severely, and then he had the concussion when he took the hard fall, and then he got the turf toe. So, our coaches had to deal with that. And then, we made a decision at the All-Star break we were 21 and 35, I believe, at the time, and we made a decision to play our younger guys with the belief and still believe that it was the right thing to do for our future. And so I want to give our coaching staff, Fred and Jim and all of them, I think they handled everything well. And I'll tell you this, I've mentioned this once before, but we were 3-20, played a game in Indiana that we played great for 44 minutes and ended up losing. We traveled to Charlotte the next day, and we I sat with the staff, and they were as positive and upbeat about our group as I was actually surprised. I thought I'd let them vent and tell me what was wrong, but they were great. And to kind of give you some perspective on that, I was on the last trip of the year to Brooklyn, and I was able to sit in a little bit on the film session that they had prior to that game, and they were still teaching. I mean, they were going at our guys, trying to get them to play the right way. So they deserve a lot of credit for the way they consistently dealt with tough situations, but how they kept at it with their work and trying to get the best out of our players. Now, when we talked about last year, when we made when we redefined our direction, our hope was that we would put out a team that played hard and one where we developed our young players. And, you know, for the most part, our guys played very hard this year. Now, we had some games where it got ugly, but that happens with a lot of teams. But they did play hard. And, you know, going forward, that's just an expectation for us. So as we go forward now, I think this is probably as important a summer as we've had in a really long time. You know, we made the deal last year, but that was at the end of June. And, you know, now we have key components in place that are going to be here. The majority of this team and roster is going to come back because we feel we're headed in the right direction, and we understand that the growth and the internal development is going to be the thing that that helps us become a better basketball team. We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need, and I mentioned this to our team after Fred spoke to them last night, we need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. We need to have a great summer. We need Chris Dunn to have a great summer and come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time, and we're confident that they will. What we're trying to build is a basketball team, one that plays the right way, one that represents the organization the right way, and with the opportunity to have our young guys grow this offseason, with the opportunity in the draft to add two pieces to that equation, we feel really good about our direction. I'm never going to oversell anything because we have got a long way to go. And I know as well as anyone that in this league to win when you're young, it's very difficult. But when I look at this year, it was disjointed in that we didn't have our full roster together for much of the season. And so our goal, and again, mentioned this to them last night, our goal is for them to get a great summer in, be healthy, and come back when September rolls around and we all come in this gym and we're working towards training camp, that we've got to hit the ground running. And we've got to be a team that is together and shows our fan base and this organization that we are going in the right direction. So this summer's as big a summer as we've had in a long, long time.
I thought that was interesting. I mean, that was John Paxson's opening statement about the bull season. Not that he's trying to put pressure, but I will tell you, as a Bulls fan, I was happy to hear him talk about how important this summer is. That it didn't feel like, at least, because who knows what the market bears and how some of this stuff goes with the draft, but it didn't seem like it was a guy who was like, well, let's punt this offseason too. It felt as if he was at least thinking about the possibility of his team being in a better position going into 18-19 than it was this past season. And maybe he was surprised. He was surprised by a couple of things. I think he was surprised by how quickly Lauri Markkanen acclimated to the NBA game. I think he was surprised at how good Chris Dunn can be when he's healthy. But I also think that he was surprised in a disappointed way about Zach LaVine. So he offered that. That was his opening statement. That wasn't him being prompted about, and you could tell, if you listen to it, you can tell that he wanted to make sure that even though he was singling out LaVine, to then be like, oh, and, you know, Chris Dunn's got to get better this offseason too, and so does Lauri Markkanen. But it's clear that he was a little disappointed with what he saw from Zach LaVine. This, to me, is part of the reason that I'm not 100% for tanking. Because you've told your players that games kind of don't matter. So if you're Zach LaVine, and Zach LaVine's looking at this as, I need to find my rhythm again. I need to figure out what type of player I am after a devastating knee injury. And I can use these games to do it without there being any consequence to it. You might get some of this. Where I don't know if LaVine thinks he's a proven commodity. He might. I don't know. I haven't been around him enough to give you a better read on the situation. The other guys are definitely trying to prove something. Chris Dunn is trying to prove that he deserved more time. And honestly, the Timberwolves could have used Chris Dunn, at least this version of Chris Dunn, you know, before he planted his face in the United Center floor. And Lauri Markkanen is trying to prove a lot of stuff. I'm not a soft European player. I was worthy of the number 7 overall pick and maybe even higher. I can play in this league. Maybe LaVine was more comfortable with his status. And you do have him having to work through the injury itself. I agree with John that I thought for the most part that team played hard. And it was a point of contention with people last week when I was saying if they have chances to win games, I don't want the players feeling like they should lose the game. That I want those guys thinking, yes, go out and win the game. Try and build that type of, here comes that word, culture. I think that it's dangerous when you set the precedent of, you know, these games don't matter, right? We'd rather you lose these games from a management standpoint. It's hard for me to then get mad at Zach LaVine for using those games for what they were intended for. Extended rehab. That's what they were intended for when you're Zach LaVine. I want to test out my leg. I want to see if I can still do what I used to be able to do when I was out there in slam dunk contests. I want to see if I still have, how is my body different now? Will I still have the range on my jumper? These are some of the pitfalls of tanking. And John Paxson has some thoughts about it. If you have some thoughts about what you heard, 312-644-6767 is the number. We're going to take a break. When we come back, a little bit of the Q&A for Pax. And some questions about tanking and whether or not Chris Dunn is good enough to be this point, the point guard of this team when this team is good. You'll hear Pax's response to both of those questions and more coming up next here on The Score. We're in the middle of a conversation about the Bulls and their season ending. John Paxson spoke with the media earlier today. We're going through that. My name is Lawrence Holmes. This is the show. The crew, by the way, Herb Lawrence is the executive producer. Eli Hershkovitz is in charge of the sound on the show. And Nick Shepkowski has your scoreboard updates. We are your nighttime crew. This segment is being brought to you by Subway Restaurants. Stop by a Subway restaurant for the new double meat signature wraps for just $6.99 each. Prices may vary. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. Double meat based on average 6-inch sub. A texter writes from the 847, assuming they sign LaVine, aren't the Bulls done tanking after this year? Transition from tank to development plus future free agent signings. That's what it sounded like. That's what it sounded like Pax was saying when he's talking about this being a really big offseason. This is what you're trying to now improve. And maybe you feel like you're farther along in that because the players that you have on your team are better than you expected them to be sooner. Save LaVine. Well, we'll see if he is that. 206 texter writes, I love how this team goes through 10 guards a season. yet finds guys like Taj, Jimmy, and Portis. Yeah, they struggle to find point guards. And I will tell you that one of the things that came out of the press conference today was that Pax likes Cam Payne. I'm not sure why, but he talked about how basically Cam is the backup point guard for this team.
Maybe it's trying to save face for that McDermott trade.
Sometimes you just got to admit, take the L and move on. Maybe he saw something. I didn't see it. Every time I see Cam Payne out there, I get frustrated. Let's hear more from Pax, and we'll get some more of your responses. If you want to text in, 670-11 is the way to do it. You can also call us 312-644-6767. A reminder, if you're a Cubs fan, Jim Deshaies is going to join us in about 10 minutes. This was from John Paxson earlier today when he was asked if the trades that were made midseason were an attempt to tank.
We did this year what we felt was in the long-term best interest of the Bulls. It's not a situation that any of us want to ever be in again. And it goes against everything as a competitive person that you believe in. But it's the way the system's set up. And to be very honest, we believe we've done it the right way. We last summer embarked on a rebuild. We had a very young roster. Every time we put out a lineup, even after the All-Star break, it was to watch players play and young players play. And I believe this totally, having played in the league and been around the league. The only way to really find out about players is to give them consistent minutes over a consistent amount of time, consistent amount of games. That doesn't mean 3 or 4 or 5. You have to give guys 20, 25 games. That has to be the sample size. And an example for us this year was, you know, last year we made the trade, we traded Doug McDermott, we got Cameron Payne back in the deal. And we threw Cam into the mix. It didn't work. And he broke his foot. He rehabbed well. We needed to see. And from my seat today, having given him that opportunity after the All-Star break to play the games he played in and the role he got to play, I feel really good about going into next season with Chris Dunn as our starter and Cameron Payne as our backup. I think Cameron showed us that, you know, he, all these young guys have a lot of things to work on and clean up, and our staff will work with them. But Cameron showed a competitiveness to him. He showed an ability to push the ball, probably better than any guard we've had in a while. And he showed a defensive edge to him that I think will help us going forward. So my point is this, that we feel we went about it the right way. Our intentions were to see what we had and develop our young guys. But, David, we don't ever want to be in this position again. And honestly, I don't think we will. I think next year, if we stay healthy, I mean, let's face it, had Chris Dunn not hurt his toe in Memphis and Zach not experienced some tendonitis, we would have won more games. It's just a fact. I think we had that kind of talent. So I don't expect us to be in that position again. I have great faith in the young group that we have, but they've got to grow, and it's not going to be easy. It's a challenge for them and for all of us, but like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Okay. I think that there is some justification for Pax feeling better about where they were a year ago to where they are now. And you heard him in there say, we never want to be in that situation again. They never want to be in a position where they're in full tank mode. If you can get away with only doing it for 1 year, great. I think people can accept that. Even if, you know, let's say they're not a playoff team next year, but it looks like they're getting better. The decisions that are made between now and October are huge for that to happen. How much do you re-sign Zach LaVine for? I think it's funny. It's like Mark Schanowski was like in my head, because that's exactly the number that I was thinking. $20 million over 4 years. $80 million. It's what, half a max? but Zach didn't really do anything to tell you I'm a max player. And I get it, and it's a little unfair because we are talking about a guy coming off a knee injury, but the Bulls have to take that into account. They have to take that into account. And partially, Derrick Rose's name came up multiple times in this press conference. It really did. But they do have to make sure that they protect themselves. And I think you can do that with a contract. Speaking of the point guard position, you heard him talking about campaign, but he sees campaign more as a backup dude. What about Chris Dunn?
Those are questions that are you know, you want a definitive answer. What we saw from Chris Dunn this year is really encouraging. When he was healthy, he showed some real competitiveness. I think we're and this has been talked to by our coaching staff, myself and Gar included. One area Chris really needs to get better is finishing. He's shown the ability to get to the lane, get to the basket. His numbers in finishing around the rim are lower than they should be. For a point guard, if you can get to the basket, you need to finish at a higher level. So, and that can only help your team. So we saw a lot of good things from Chris. I think Chris has an opportunity to be one of the better defensive guards in the league. He certainly showed that at times this year. The toughest thing for young guys is to be consistent in everything they do. And that's what we need. You know, as much as anything, that's what we need from this group going forward. You know, coaches trust the guys that are consistent, and rightfully so. So we need this group to be more consistent in how they play. And again, they're young. You expect maturity from them, and you expect them to grow and develop. And we're on the right track there.
A texter writes in, big assumption is that the Bulls will draft at least one difference maker in this year's draft or trade picks to get a contributor. Who do you know is going to be a difference maker? This is the problem with the draft. Did people think that Lauri Markkanen was a difference maker? And now he looks like he's going to be a pretty good player. There are people who are like, oh, I can't believe they're trading for that guy. And look at what they got. Obviously, everyone who is in the draft and everyone who is in the lottery assumes that they're going to draft a difference maker. That's the whole point. Can you do it is a different question. So what do they need? Here's what Pac said they need via free agency or the draft.
I think we need to look at the wing position. You know, that would be an ideal spot. You know, size and length at the wing is a shooting component, a defensive component would be something that if you're looking at an area that we would like to improve, that would be it. But depending on where we draft, you know, it's hard to overlook talent, even when you're looking at maybe a specific need. And so, again, that process, we're still over 2 months away from the draft. We have a lot of work to do. But, you know, our game has become, you know, positions, not that they're going by the wayside, but they, you know, the lines are blurred. You no longer really have, you know, center, power forward. I mean, you need versatility. You know, our game has changed that much. And so we can use versatile players, guys that have length and size and you know, shooting component, those type of things.
I would agree with the shooting component aspect. You better get someone who can consistently knock down threes. Someone that can help spread the floor, even it out, put some pressure on the defense. There's still more that I want to go through from what Pax had to say today, but we are going to shift over to a little bit of Cubs conversation. That's because we are going to talk with Jim Deshaies, the Cubs color analyst, coming up after Nick Szczepkowski is done with his scoreboard update.
During the last AB, we were talking about where I was hitting the ball, and you know, I hit it right where I told him, and I tap him back in the chest. But you know, it's just a game. It just got me. I mean, I'm gonna play hard every day. Whoever likes it, fine. Whoever doesn't like it, that's you.
That was Javier Baez after the game today talking about some of the comments from Clint Hurdle. And we had a discussion to start the show off about unwritten rules of baseball, what is showing up an opponent, all sorts of stuff. It might not be a bad idea to get an expert to weigh in on this. Jim Deshaies does an incredible job sitting next to Lynn Casper as the Cubs TV analyst. Also played for a long time in Major League Baseball, so he would be the guy to ask. He joins me now here on The Score. Jim, thanks for joining me tonight. I truly appreciate it.
Sure, Lawrence. Good to be with you, man.
Same to have you. To have you on the show is such a good thing. I heard you today while the first Baez at bat was happening, and you and Lynn were trying to decipher the conversation between Cervelli and Baez, and I thought that you said very bluntly when Lynn asked you, you know, if Cervelli was telling Baez what he should and shouldn't do, that's not his job. Why is it not his job?
Not his teammate. And I, you know, again, I don't know what that conversation was all about. You know, this is it's kind of a wacky part of our game, and certain guys, and I'm not accusing Cervelli of this because I don't know exactly what went down there, but there have been certain guys over the years that have, you know, they try to be the sheriff of the game. And it's one thing to voice an opinion to a guy when he's on the field after something happens, or talk within your own clubhouse that you don't care for the way a certain player goes about his business out there. But the situation where a guy's coming up to hit like that, I just don't think it's Cervelli's business to worry about what transpired the day before. And like Javi, you know, Javi, somebody in our club talked to Javi about it after the game yesterday, and Javi, I thought, was very proactive the way he came out after the game and said, look, I screwed up, shouldn't have done it. You know, so much of this stuff is much ado about nothing. People get all worked up about some of these unwritten rules of the game. And the reason why they're unwritten is because there are no real rules, because what applies to one club or one guy might not fit somebody else or some other team. So, you know, my point of view is just go play.
What were you like as a player when it came to stuff like this?
Well, I you know, there were certain things that other guys would do on the field on other clubs that it might rub you the wrong way. And there's a long tradition in our game of bench jockeying. So if somebody, you know, you just give them the business in the dugout, and that's where it ended, you know. And that's what I thought last night when Javi popped up and he kind of flung his bat way up in the air. You know, if I'm over in that Pittsburgh dugout, I'm probably yelling at him, and I'm sure some other guys were. The idea being that by flipping your bat in the air like that, it's like you're saying, I should hit that ball 600 feet. And so players take umbrage with that because this is a hard game to play. And, you know, you should never make it look like it's real easy, and you have no business ever making it out. So that's the kind of stuff that goes on all the time. You know, a guy flips his bat in disgust because he thought he had a pitch he should have hit, and somebody from the other dugout will yell at him, just run it out, you know, and then you move on.
Yeah, you see guys break their bat as they're going back to the dugout all the time when they're upset about a pitch they thought they should have crushed.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I think this, you know, I think, and again, I don't know how to codify all this. You know, is the broken bat over the knee acceptable, but flipping the bat way up in the air after you pop up is not? You know, guys will yell at opponents for not running hard down the first baseline, like, you know, run it out, you know, because you're quote-unquote not respecting the game. If I'm on the other side, I don't care. I don't care who's not running or who's running hard on the other club. I just worry about my own team.
I find Baez and Contreras, like, I enjoy watching them, and I was saying earlier that I was a bit of a curmudgeon growing up. Like, when it came to playing baseball, I was a bit of a curmudgeon too. And as I've gotten older, as the game seemingly is changing a little bit, and I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed, like, kind of letting go of some of that stuff as a fan. As someone that has seen this at the highest level, where do you stand on the fun aspect of the game being expressed during the game?
Yeah, you know, I still kind of have an old school, you know, sentimentality about it, where if a guy hits the ball out of the ballpark, I prefer that he kind of put his head down and just run around the bases and not Cadillac it. But I certainly understand that the game has changed. So for me, those kinds of things, it doesn't matter what I think. It matters what the modern player thinks. And little by little, I think guys are becoming more accepting of that. You know, if somebody wants to make a big show of hitting a home run or do something to draw attention to themselves, stuff that in the old days people would get upset about, I think it's much more acceptable in the game today, and I'm fine with it.
Jim Deshaies is joining me here for a few minutes, the Cubs' excellent TV analyst here on The Score. So, the Pirates are in first place, and they've gotten off to a really good start. How surprised are you by that?
A little, but not a lot, because it's such a small sample. You know, if they're still in first place in the middle of May, then that would register a little bit with me. I think, wow, the Pirates are really playing above their heads, or, you know, far better than we all expected. But we're still talking about, what, a 12-game sample. And, you know, I'm sure their teams are going to lose 95 games this year. They're going to have stretches where they're 8-4, 9-3, and 10-2. But good for them. You know, I think they have a chance to be a little bit more competitive than many of us thought. I think their lineup is pretty good. I think their pitching, especially the starters, are a little suspect. So I doubt that they'll hold up. But I think it's fun for baseball when some of these clubs that everybody assumed were going to be really bad get off to a good start and create some interesting talking points.
What's the point in the season where you feel comfortable that you have an idea of what a team is? I've talked to some baseball people that say it's 60 games. That, you know, if you get to Memorial Day, you kind of have an idea. When do you personally feel comfortable that you know what a squad is?
Well, yeah, I don't know about no, but I think it's gradual. I think it comes over time. As you watch a team play, you get a sense of, you know, some of the young players, if they've, you know, playing at a high level, and you watch, you know, what they do, and you know, this kid looks like he's got the ability to sustain this. But middle of May, Memorial Day, something like that, you usually have a pretty good idea who are the better clubs and who are the second division teams.
Yu Darvish being added to this rotation, I find him fascinating because of the arsenal of pitches that he can throw. You did this for a long time at the major league level. Did you know, like, start in and start out, or appearance in, appearance out, which pitches you felt like you could trust?
Yeah, you know, I think you usually figure that out in the bullpen or as the game goes along. And from one game to the next, it doesn't change a whole lot. You know, and I think a guy like Darvish is so talented. What has surprised me about him to this point is he's basically been a two-pitch pitcher. He's throwing fastballs and sliders, and he'll manipulate his slider, change the shape of it a little bit. But I thought we'd see, you know, maybe a few more slower curveballs and mix in occasional changeup or split. But I think, you know, part of his story is there was a time when he was throwing so many different pitches, somebody decided that he needed to kind of narrow his repertoire a little bit to find some consistency. So I think somewhere in between is where he's going to be at his best. And I guess that speaks to how good he is, that he can go out there and be a fastball slider guy and still pitch as well as he did his last time out.
I like the guys that'll take, you know, two pitches and vary them, and they can, and it ends up being four or five different pitches. What's the key to that?
Well, it's just, you know, most guys can shape their breaking ball a little bit, make it a little bigger and a little softer, or a little harder and shorten the break on it. And we get tied up sometimes in the jargon between sliders and cutters and slurves and curves. And for me, it's finding it's more about velocity, change in velocity. So if you're throwing, like Darvish, if you're throwing 94, 95 with your fastball and you're throwing an 87-mile-an-hour slider, I think there's benefit in being able to flip a little 75-mile-an-hour curveball up there, just to give the hitters a different look. But most guys can just change their arm angle a little bit and create a little bit different movement on their slider. So sometimes it has a little more downward break to it. Sometimes it's a little more horizontal across the strike zone.
I've been trying to figure out if the Cubs as an organization care about the leadoff spot, or if I just think about it wrong, that you know, the idea of, you know, the guy is only going to lead off once a game, like, pops into my head when I'm watching games. But I still wonder, is there value in having the prototypical leadoff guy and not worrying about having to configure a lineup around a matchup that day?
Well, I think if you have a prototypical leadoff guy, that's great. If you, you know, have a guy who's a high on base percentage guy who also has some speed, and then a perfect world with a little power. But if you don't, then you have to play the matchup game and try to find a guy who's going to fill that role, you know, on any given day, depending on who the opposing pitcher is. And I think the bottom line is, do you have an offense that is able to generate enough runs regardless of whether you have a leadoff man or not? So if you score a bunch of runs, and you know, the Cubs last year finished second in the league in runs scored, trailing only the Rockies, and the Rockies obviously have a huge advantage playing up a Coors Field. So I think there's been a lot of talk about the Cubs in the leadoff spot, but I don't think it really matters a whole lot as long as you score enough runs.
How much do you think managers matter, and what do you think Joe Maddon is exceptionally good at?
I think Joe is really good in terms of the way the culture he creates in the clubhouse. And not just the fun stuff. I mean, everybody knows all about all the wacky stuff he does. But he creates an environment where guys want to come to work. They're anxious to come to work, and they work hard. I mean, I'm sure you've heard it. He's always trying to get guys to back off, you know, a little less time in the cage. Don't come to the ballpark so early. He frees guys up to be themselves. I think on some clubs, if you have an old school authoritative manager, guys feel like they have to behave a certain way, and maybe they don't relax. And in our game, you have to be able to relax to perform. It's a game where you have to control emotion and control adrenaline as opposed to feed off of it. So I think Joe's really good at that. I think, you know, the way he plays matchups, I think, is great. He really pays attention. And it's not just left versus right. It's who's good against a power guy, who can handle a finesse pitcher. He'll set his lineup defensively based on who he's got on the mound on any given day, whether it's a fly ball guy or ground ball guy, and he keeps everybody involved. I think it's so important to have flexible players that you can move around the diamond and give them all an opportunity to play. One, in case somebody gets hurt, you have to have somebody who's ready to step in. And two, it's just a long season, and guys are going to rise and fall, and you need to have as many options as possible.
He's done a really good job of balancing all that, because when you look around the diamond at this Cubs team, I also think about whether or not players would prefer, you know, I'm hitting third, I'm playing third every day. Or if there's something to them staying mentally involved in the game because they're not sure where they might end up in a particular lineup.
Yeah, and I think obviously, the position part of it, there's some guys that are not capable of moving around and playing multiple positions, and if you do move them around, you're going to weaken your club a little bit. Sometimes you have to do it, for whatever reason. But in terms of batting order, I think most guys don't really care a whole lot. I think it can become a crutch for guys. Use it as an excuse, like, I'm used to hitting third, now I'm hitting fifth. If somebody wants to make that excuse for you, let them. But I've always been very skeptical of the player who uses that as an excuse. I come in one day, I'm batting third, and then I come in the next, I'm batting. So what's the difference? Your job description hasn't changed. Likewise, a bullpen guy who may fall on hard times, and instead of taking responsibility, he wants to blame it on the manager or the pitching coach because he's not being used in the way he thinks he should be used. To me, your job is to go out there and get outs. Just go get outs. If somebody else wants to make that excuse for you, again, let them, but you shouldn't be doing that.
Have you figured out the muscle memory to settling into a season as a broadcaster versus a player? Like, when does a Jim Deshays get comfortable in a season, or are you already there?
Well, early in the season, sometimes it's a little tougher for me because trends haven't really started to develop yet. you know, and if you watch a game and we pop up a graphic, you know, relief pitcher comes into the game and we're stealing his numbers. His ERA is, 4.97. Well, he's pitched 4 1/3 innings. it's just pretty much meaningless. So I tend to lean back on historical performance. What did he do last year? What has he done over the course of his career? For me, I like, when we get into the flow and the quote unquote grind of the everyday season. And it's about a month in, where trends start to develop and you get a sense of what guys are doing out there.
When you don't have baseball, when the season's over, what do you miss about it?
Probably the routine. I think I've been doing this playing and broadcasting about 30 years now. So you get used to, the morning coffee, heading to the ballpark at a certain time, doing your prep work at a certain time, and then the game. It's a weird thing because in August and September, you get a little road weary. But by January, I'm tempted to just go walk into a hotel lobby and sit down and have a cup of coffee. It's kind of like a home away from home for me. start to pine for that a little bit.
That's very cool. Jim, this was an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me tonight.
Yeah, great to be with you.
We'll do this again. Jim DeShays. That was fun. He's right, though. I miss it. Like, when, I'll tell you, it's waned in the last, 2 years, but every July, I go, it's almost time for football. Like, I kind of was on that clock of, I better get everything I need done before training camp starts because, then all hell's going to break loose. I understand where he's coming from on that. It's cool to talk with him. If you need legal advice by a reputable attorney, send questions that you want to answer to cbschicago.com/legaladvice or look online for free Legal Fridays with Horwitz, Horwitz & Associates. That's cbschicago.com/legaladvice. Go to profootballweekly.com. Draft your greatest team on the NFL's modern era, and you can win a trip for two to the big game next February in Atlanta. That's profootballweekly.com, home of the best coverage of the draft and free agency anywhere. Be back after this on The Score.
Someone texted in, it's been said you can lose it in April. Throw Joe out now.
They've been at three consecutive league championship series and won a World Series. I agree with Jim 100% about Joe Maddon's effectiveness as a manager. One of the things that he's great at, and maybe his best attribute as a manager, is the vibe that he creates. You might not like it. It might not be your cup of tea. You don't like Groovy Joe, but it works. And maybe as this group of players grows older, it won't be as easy for Joe to create that. But I think that his room is already, he won't even have to. Those guys are doing, clearly, with the thing with Baez, they policed it themselves. And it wasn't heavy-handed. Nor did it need to be. I'm trying desperately not to do the segments of, Cubs are back to 6-6. Because everyone I talk to around baseball says, give them 60 games to figure it out, 60 games to get them what they need, and let them roll the last 42. So look, things will come up and we'll discuss them, but if you're worried about record and stuff, this is not the show for you. If you like football talk and sexy football talk, this is the show for you. Dan Durkin is going to join me next. He did a film breakdown of Quentin Nelson. You'll want to stick around for that and more next here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Yeah. Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.